The meeting or the recording has restarted at 9:51.
Great. There are no agenda items under number 8, and which brings us to number 9. There was a hand raised by Katrina Cecil Denton. Do you have a question?
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Yes, it was just kind of regarding the supervision. I actually work for CJPS company, and we were actively looking for, you know, the rules and regulations regarding supervision, because I'm not really sure exactly what's going on with our supervision issues, but they have been asking if PTs are available for supervision even via telehealth. And so my supervisor and our leaders in the company were looking for clarification whether this was allowed, just because some situations where we have the need for supervision, say in Tucson and like Jamie said in Florence, were coming up. And like I said, we were questioning where the supervising therapists were for these PTAs. And so we were actively looking for what's allowed, best practices, things like that. And so when we were looking for through the board regulations, it would help to really address the specifics of what's allowed. I mean, I myself don't do supervision via telehealth because I feel like I need to see the patient personally, especially as you were saying, this is a very vulnerable population, but I would vote with you guys that it would be great to just address this situation further as far as the supervision.
Thank you. Okay, so we are now at agenda item number 9, initial reviews before the board. And I do have a scripture read before we start those. This is a time and place scheduled for the board's initial review of complaints. There are 7 cases for the board to consider. The matters will be heard by the board pursuant to its authority under ARS 3224.
I think we lost Dr. Pastillo.
Sorry about that. Just lost it. The summary applies to all cases that we will hear, and I will not repeat it for each case. We'll first begin with introductions. My name is Dr. Bustillo, and I'm the board's chairperson. I will now ask the other board members to introduce themselves. You're muted.
Dr. Kelly King, vice president of the board.
Giovanni Leone, professional member, secretary.
Joshua Greer, public member.
Joshua Barton, public member. And Dr. Bustillo, I know that Ms. Grom is trying to get a hold of us. I don't know.
I'm good to leave the meeting now.
Yes.
Yes.
And in regards to the telehealth supervisory stuff, I'd like to know what you guys come to your conclusion if you on your next meeting about it. I'd like to know.
Ms. Grom, the staff will be in contact with you after the meeting.
Okay, thank you. Bye-bye.
For those participating in the initial reviews, please be aware that we have read all the materials submitted. If at any time it is necessary to refer to patients, please use initials only. In each case, the board will first hear a brief summary of the investigative report from staff. Once staff is done, the board will ask the complainant, if present, if they wish to address the board, and then the board will ask the professional, if present, and their attorney, if represented, if they would like to do the same. In order to give everyone the same opportunity to address the board, we ask those speaking not to take the time repeating information that the board has already received. You will be given the same amount of time to address the board that it took to present the investigative report, or 5 minutes, whichever is greater. Please keep in mind that this is not the time and place for the complainant and the professional to address each other. The board has a civility policy that prohibits the use of any type of disruptive conduct. Those violating this policy, after being given the opportunity to modify their behavior, will be removed from the meeting room. Once the board concludes with its discussion with parties, it will move into deliberations. While the parties are free to stay and listen to the deliberations, we ask that you respect the fact that we are now discussing the case amongst ourselves and request that you do not interrupt the process. The board's opinions include, but are not limited to, the board's options include, but are not limited to, dismissing the complaint, taking non-disciplinary action such as issuing an advisory letter or order for continuing education, offering the professional a consent agreement, requesting the professional participate in an informal hearing, or remanding the matter to a formal hearing. Before I call the first case, I want to advise everyone that initial reviews are audio recorded. Accordingly, it is important that everyone speak loudly and clearly and only one person speak at a time. Lastly, as a reminder to the board, this is not an informal hearing. If you have a few questions that will help you better understand the case and take action to potentially resolve the case through dismissal, non-disciplinary action, or a consent agreement for either disciplinary or non-disciplinary action, please feel free to ask them. However, if you have a number of substantive questions and or feel the case requires additional investigation, it may be more appropriate to move the case to a formal hearing. And our first case is 2377 Florinance PTA. And I believe this is Liz that will give us our.
Yes. Case 2377 was opened after review of a complaint filed by her employer at the time, Haven Home Healthcare, alleging that Jelaine Florian's PTA did not report a change in patient status to her supervising PT. It is alleged that Ms. Florian's fraudulently documented that she reported the change in status to her supervising PT. The director of nursing at Haven Home Health also alleged that Ms. Florian's fraudulently documented information in the notes of two other patients. Ms. Florian's was provided with an opportunity to receive a copy of the investigative report, but did not request a copy. Potential statute violations identified for you to consider include ARS 3220445, engaging in the performance of substandard care by a physical therapist assistant, including exceeding the authority to perform tasks selected and delegated by the supervising licensee regardless of whether actual injury to the patient is established. ARS 3220414, making misleading, deceptive, untrue, or fraudulent representations in violation of this chapter or in the practice of the profession. ARS 3220440, failing to maintain adequate patient records, and as it relates to R424303, patient care management, and ARS 3220440413, charging unreasonable or fraudulent fees for services performed or not performed. This matter is for your review.
Great, thank you. Is Ms. Florinance, how do you say your name? Are you on the call?
I haven't seen her yet, but Florian's.
Florian's, thank you.
I don't see her.
You don't see her?
Mm-hmm.
I kind of feel like I would like to ask her some questions about this, although I do feel like the report was very well done. And so without her being here, I feel like we might want to look at an informal hearing to invite her to participate. Does anybody else have thoughts on that?
I would second that. I have some questions.
That's a motion. I'd second it as well, Dr. Bustillo.
Okay, so I'll move that we move this to an informal hearing so that PTA can participate.
Is there additional investigation that you would like?
I feel like you've added the additional allegations very well with that, and so I'm okay with what we have at this point unless somebody else has a different thought.
So is it then the motion to move to informal hearing, adding the additional allegations per the investigative report?
Yeah, she added them as she spoke about it.
Yeah.
So yes, all of the allegations that were discussed.
Yeah, for me, I don't need necessarily any more investigation, but I do have some questions for her. Unfortunately, I feel like she should be here so we could ask her these questions. And I think, I mean, I'm a little bit torn in just making a movement without talking with her because she's chosen not to be here. She's chosen to not give us the opportunity to hear her voice, basically, is what I'm saying.
Yeah, I think in my mind, that warrants moving to an informal hearing, because if she's going to choose not to defend these allegations and not to be here and answer our questions, that tells me that we need to look at this more seriously. We would look at it seriously if she was here, but you know, without her defense, I'm more likely to move towards a disciplinary action. And so we need an informal hearing anyway.
Dr. Bustillo, there are a couple of callers that are identified only by phone number, an unknown. Should we call again for her name to determine?
Yes, absolutely.
If she's present at all. Ms. Florence, are you present at the meeting? If you are, please unmute your phone. If you're struggling with muting, there is a chat feature. You can identify that you are here. Okay, we see nothing, so.
Okay, thank you. All right, so we have a first and a second. Any other discussion on the motion? All right, we can call the question there, Judy.
Okay. It has been moved and seconded to move case 2377, Jelaine Florence, PTA, to an informal hearing to include all potential allegations identified in the investigative report. Dr. Bustillo?
Yes.
Dr. King?
Yes.
Mr. Leone?
Yes.
Mr. Greer?
Yes.
Mr. Barton?
Yes.
That motion passes.
Okay, so now we are on to 2378, Mandy Aldous. Are you here, Dr. Aldous? And are you represented?
I am.
Hi.
And yeah. I am represented.
This is Dennis Wolinchek. I represent her. Thank you.
Great. Thank you. Can we go ahead and have our overview? Is that Mindy?
Yes, it is. And I just, I don't know if the complainant patient BO is present. And if so, if she is going to participate. But the board opened case 2378 after review of the complaint from patient BO. She alleged that Ms. Aldous engaged in substandard care in treating her pelvic floor dysfunction. Based on medical record review, interview of BO, and written statements, additional potential violations were included in the investigative report for the board's consideration. Ms. Aldous and Mr. Wolinchek received a copy of the investigative report and provided a supplemental written response, which was included in your materials as Exhibit 5. Staff identified the following possible statute violations: ARS 3224.4, engaging in the performance of substandard care by physical therapist due to a deliberate or negligent act or failure to act regardless of whether actual injury to the patient is established; ARS 3224.20, failing to maintain adequate patient records; and as it relates to R424.304, adequate patient records. I will note in the investigative report an error in one of the potential violations. It should read ARS 3224.3H, On each date of service, a physical therapist must provide and document all of the therapeutic intervention that requires the expertise of a physical therapist and must determine the use of physical therapist assistants and other assistive personnel to ensure the delivery of care that is safe, effective, and efficient, and as it relates to R424.303.B.2. On each date of service, a physical therapist shall determine based on the patient's acuity and treatment plan whether it is appropriate to use assistive personnel to perform a selective treatment intervention or physical therapy task for the patient. This case is for your review.
Dr. Aldous or your attorney, would you like to make an opening comment?
I'll speak for her. No, we think we've provided everything for the board. Thank you, Bill.
Great. And would you be willing to answer questions from the board?
Yeah, probably so, depending on the question, of course, but yeah.
Yes.
Okay.
Everybody froze on my screen, but can you hear me?
I can hear you.
Okay.
Dr. Hall, this is Kelly King. I have a question for you. Tell us a little bit about certifications and how long you've been practicing in women's health, pelvic health, pelvic floor health intervention treatment.
Go ahead, Mandy.
Okay. I started studying pelvic therapy and women's health in physical therapy school under Dr. Sue Smith. That was in 1998. Women's health wasn't really a certification or anything at that juncture. It was relatively new, and I was fascinated with the SI joint specifically, and I started treating SI joint dysfunction when I graduated in the year 2000. Since then, I have studied under Dr. Hesch, who's well known in the SI joint dysfunction world. When did I meet him? Over 14 years ago. I started becoming an SI joint specialist over 10 years ago when they certified it, and have been treating the pelvic floor specifically for over 18 years when I opened up my practice in 2006.
Are you certified in pelvic health or women's health?
I'm not a pelvic floor specialist certified through the professional organization. I have looked at doing that. It is a very lengthy, expensive process that I have not engaged in, but I am a SI joint certified specialist. But I have taken continuing education on the pelvic floor treatment and treated likely over 1,000 patients with pelvic floor dysfunction.
Thank you. And do you recall the patient saying anything to you about her discomfort or frustration or feeling like she wasn't moving in the right direction?
Never. Patient never. I was astounded with this because patient never had any complaints as documented. And certainly I don't remember every visit super clearly because there were no problems with this patient. She never made a complaint. She never had a discussion with me that things weren't going well. Everything, according to my records, was pretty much on track of what I would expect as a postpartum pelvic floor treatment. These are not cases that we see immediate relief. They definitely are more long-term, especially postpartum. And I do not recall any issues with this patient. Nothing was documented, no complaints to staff or to myself. My staff reached out to her many times after she canceled her last visit, including myself via phone and via text to have some communication with the patient, and I received nothing.
The second part of some of the allegations and the investigative report has to do with your documentation. How do you determine which patients are going to be seen by assistive personnel? Does every patient start with a tech?
No. But I mean, in terms of modalities, I obviously saw the patient on the first visit and directed the technician to set up stimulation in an appropriate fashion. I treat a patient internally and externally on every single visit and direct all personnel in terms of any exercises that are instructed and stretches if appropriate.
And do you document which of the treatments in the note that were completed by sets of personnel versus by you?
Sorry, I don't understand the question.
So in the daily treatment note, if the tech does the modalities and you do the soft tissue or whatever work you're doing pelvic floor, do you document that part of the treatment was actually done by not by yourself? Or do you just document what the patient experienced and sign it as though you had provided all of the treatment?
No, the board should have been provided with a flow sheet of any portion of the treatment that is done by a technician or my PTA. There's a flow sheet that's kept in an administration record with the signatures and initials of anyone that is engaging in treatment, including therapeutic exercise on the exercise sheet and any modalities that they might have assisted in.
Okay, thank you.
Dr. Aldous, I have a question for you. So I'm looking over your documentation and I see under the objective section, it says like exercise flow sheet, 30 minutes. I'm assuming that that's all the exercises that you potentially have the techs going through. Am I correct in that assumption?
Correct, myself or the technicians, but yes, the technicians would usually be out in the gym supervising and instructing the patient in the exercises.
Okay. So then the ones that are labeled under manual, are these all performed by you specifically? I see soft tissue massage for the low back, spine mobilization, stretching to the hips or the lumbar spine, and then muscle energy with biofeedback. Can I assume that that's all done by you specifically?
That's all done by me specifically.
Okay. So one of the complaints that the patient had is that she would come in, she would see you for about 5 minutes, and then she'd be working with a tech the rest of the time. According to this, I'm seeing that you were working one-on-one for anywhere from 35 minutes to 45 minutes based on the times that you have in here. Is that correct?
And I don't know her allegations, but she received internal biofeedback on every visit, which does take about 5 to 10 minutes. And then I would do stretching out in the gym and an SI joint or a low back mobilization out in the gym. So she would see me actually two different experiences, during every visit. So I don't understand her allegations there. I do have a PTA that would assist in some of the soft tissue mobilization and perhaps some external stretching out in the gym from assistance, but in terms of, and that should all be documented. If her allegations on time, I don't know that that was ever an allegation. She was definitely seen by me on every visit and the appropriate time was documented.
Okay. Thank you.
I have just a general question on your goals and things like that. They seem very nonspecific to your patients. Do you use like a standard set of goals for your patients, or how do you come up with the specific plan of care?
Of course, I use a TheraOffice, which comes up with some generalized goals that I modify, and there should be some specific goals regarding the pelvic health of the patient listed in there. So I disagree that they are all general goals. There might be some in there in terms of home exercise that might be seen general, but there's definitely specific goals regarding her pelvic floor.
I'm actually not seeing any goals regarding pelvic floor, to be honest with you. Range of motion, improve posture, strength, return to full recreational activities, but it doesn't define those, normal gait, independence with home exercise. There's nothing in here regarding pelvic floor.
There's one that's the third from the bottom.
It says incontinence.
Yeah, incontinence and pelvic floor symptoms. Again, just not very specific with functional and recreational.
Yeah, the 10 goals, there's the one very
general one that says return to function and recreational activities, including decreased incontinence for 12 weeks. Is that the goal you're referring to?
Correct.
That's what I'm seeing.
Yeah. So I think back to Dr. Bustillo's question, these are really general. Do you just choose from a drop-down list, generally speaking, or how does it go for writing goals for your patients that are an objective and measurable?
I have a drop-down list, of course. I believe every therapist using an EMS has one of those. I wrote specific goals regarding the pelvic floor therapy. I wrote about the incontinence and her pelvic floor symptoms. So those were obviously specifically written, and I also increased strength, which would include her pelvic floor symptoms. So I find that those goals are appropriate for pelvic floor.
And they just seem very, very general, and that you could apply them to any person that you were seeing, not this particular person. That we're seeing.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Any other questions?
I guess the question I would ask is, looking at your goals and your charting in this case, do you think it could have been better? Is there anything that you would have changed?
I think you can always do better with documentation. I believe that I definitely met the standards of documentation. I definitely think that there are clear goals to work on in the documentation. Could I have done better is the question. I think all of us could do better. In retrospect, would I have made better goals for her? Likely, more specific. But I think that the goals are definitely within the standard of care and documentation. And I definitely think that there are some specific goals. So I would disagree that that any patient walking in the door is going to have a goal with incontinence or pelvic floor symptoms.
Okay, thank you.
Any other questions? Ms. Aldous, or would you or your attorney like to make any type of closing remarks?
I don't, but Mandy, do you have anything further to say?
Not if there's not any other questions.
Okay. All right, so the board will deliberate and I feel like in regard to the patient allegation, I mean, anybody can have, you know, I'm not going to say an adverse effect, but maybe not get the complete relief or the complete, I guess, relief of their symptoms with, you know, any course of action, any course of therapy. And I feel like that could happen to anybody. So I feel like that the patient's allegation, you know, is, she just didn't have the best experience in this particular clinic, and it's unfortunate, but I don't feel like, you know, that there was any, malintent or any type of poor treatment given. I really feel like the biggest issues are really the documentation issues, with regard to this case, but I'm willing to entertain thoughts.
I'm in agreement. I don't necessarily see anything here that would be considered substandard in terms of the care that was being delivered. So I wouldn't necessarily propose anything regarding that. I think, as she mentioned, the documentation can always be better. And I would definitely agree with that. There are some improvements that can be made within the documentation. So I think that's something that we could potentially, help with continuing education.
Yeah, I'm in agreement with you, Dr. Rocio. I'm not seeing any substantiation for substandard care. By any means, fit is so important. Rapport and relationship with your PT, especially in a really sensitive treatment intervention such as pelvic floor. So it just wasn't a good fit. It sounds like the patient's had some success someplace else now, and so that's good for her, and that's the beauty of our practice, is having the freedom to choose a different practitioner. That being said, though, I do agree with both of you in that there is an opportunity for improved education around writing objective measurable goals that are very specific to the patient and what the patient's complaining about, or what, so then you know whether they're actually making progress. I would highly support some education around documentation.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I mean, that was my only concern reading through this is, I look at those goals. Maybe one of them, it at least addresses the issue. It just looks really boilerplate to me. Mm-hmm. And in my mind, that's substandard, because the standard requires an individualized plan of care.
Yeah.
And so, I think that allegation is probably substantiated. I think the other two, I would agree, are probably not. And so, I think probably my thought is, let's look at some continuing education on that front.
Yeah, so I make a motion that we offer a non-disciplinary board order for continuing education. I'm going to say 6 hours of documentation to be completed within 6 months, can be online, does not, cannot be used toward her CEUs required for renewal, and that needs to be board approved.
Second.
Do we need to dismiss the first complaint?
I don't think so. I think it's an initial review.
Okay. I'm just...
Mr. Harris, you're muted.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the board. At this point, you are resolving the matter by issuing a non-disciplinary order for continuing education.
Great. Thank you.
Who did the second?
Giovanni.
Thank you.
Any further discussion? Okay. We can call the vote.
It's been moved and seconded in case 2378, Mandy Aldous, PT, that to issue a non-disciplinary order to include continuing education, which shall be completed in 6 months. Courses must be pre-approved, may be completed online, and do not count towards renewal requirements. The continuing education shall be completed in the area of documentation for a minimum of 6 hours. Dr. Bastillo?
Yes.
Dr. King?
Yes.
Mr. Leone?
Yes.
Mr. Greer?
Yes.
Mr. Barton?
Yes.
That motion passes.
Great. Thank you. The staff will be in contact with you, Ms. Aldous, about about this. And please, whatever course that you take, have it pre-approved by staff.
Okay. Thank you.
Great. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.
Thanks.
Okay, we're moving on to case 2386, Suzanne Leg Matthews, PT. Are you present on the call, Ms. Matthews?
Yes.
Oh, perfect.
Yes.
And she is represented by Ms. Morena Diaz.
Well, she's with our office too, but Michael Goldberg is here.
Okay.
Hi.
Great. Thank you. Is it Mindy? Are you?
Yes.
Okay. Great. Thank you.
Yeah. So this is case 2386, Suzanne Leg Matthews, PT. The board staff were notified that Ms. Leg Matthews had an adverse action taken against her Colorado license. She had failed to complete the required CEUs when she renewed her license on or before 10/31/22 in Colorado. She was issued a stipulated agreement allowing her to surrender her Colorado license. The agreement was executed on September 11th of 2023. Ms. Leg Matthews had been working under a compact privilege in Arizona since July 27th of 21 with Colorado as her home state. She then applied for Arizona licensure under universal recognition and was granted her Arizona license on December 9th of 2022. In order to apply to Arizona by universal recognition, she was required to surrender her PT compact privilege due to the residency conflict. And she would also have to have maintained at least one active license. So in essence, she had to renew her Colorado license in order to get her Arizona license under universal recognition. The board completed a preliminary review of the above information at the October 31st, 2023 meeting and voted to open a case with the potential violation cited of ARS 32-2044-9, having had a license or certificate revoked or suspended or other disciplinary action taken, or an application for licensure or certification refused, revoked, or suspended by the proper authorities of another state, territory, or country. This case is for your review.
Thank you. Ms. Matthews, would you or your attorney like to make an opening comment?
I would like to make an opening comment and then open it up for my client to answer questions. I just want a few facts to be clear. My client took the continuing education. There was an audit. She was told that some of the continuing education that she took didn't qualify. Should have taken more continuing education. Didn't want a Colorado license. Wasn't there and decided to leave. And with the approval of Colorado, she left. Now, this is an important fact. I've looked at the order from Colorado. I don't know if you guys have it, but there's nothing in there that says this is a discipline. You're going to be reported. I mean, we've talked about it, and on reflection, I think she realizes that had she had a lawyer and had she thought about it, she would have realized, hey, stay in Colorado, finish the CEUs, and it wouldn't be a big deal. But instead, she left, and it was a reportable event to her, but she didn't know. And when I first got this case, I thought, she must have done something wrong in Colorado, and they asked her to take continuing education, and she didn't. And I've seen that happen, but this was a mistake, and she decided to leave Colorado. Colorado allowed her to leave. And I just want to emphasize again, there's nothing that would tell a layperson or even a lawyer, if you have this agreement, that says this is discipline. It's just allowing her to surrender a license. So when it came time to fill something out or answer a question in Arizona, I think she mistakenly left it out. That's the I want to set that table. And she's available to answer any questions for you.
Great, thank you. Does anyone have any questions? Seems like everything revolves around the timeline of when things began to happen. When you first heard from Colorado that you were going to be audited on your continuing ed and then they didn't accept it, you had your Arizona compact privilege. and then you were going to change that to universal recognition when you move here, or you did move here.
Okay, I'm a little confused because I got audited in March of last year, and I got my universal recognition in December of 2022. So it was after that? It's after I got my Arizona license, they audited me.
Okay.
Yeah, it's my contract finished on October the 31st, 2022, and the next day I applied for universal recognition, and I got that in December, and then I got audited in March the next year. And I got audited and I communicated for like 6 months with them, going back and forth, trying to work out what to do. So.
And you were working in Arizona at that time?
Yes. Well, I was working in Arizona from September of 2021 till it ran out. Yeah, on a compact license. Okay. And when it ran out, then I applied for, yeah.
So I guess, were you in good standing? Are you saying you were in good standing in Colorado when you applied for the Arizona license?
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's a random audit. And I'd done a bunch of CEUs. And when they audited me, I thought, you know, there was some that were maybe a little bit sketchy because they were play therapy based, which is what I do. But yeah, I thought it would be fine. And I completely misunderstood the whole communication thing. So, which I've had a lawyer in Colorado. I didn't think it was a big deal, so I didn't get one.
So your license now is still under universal recognition in Arizona?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
And are you practicing right now here in Arizona?
Yes. Yes.
How many hours were you short in Colorado?
You know, I'm not exactly sure. They didn't tell me. I've actually been emailing in the last week trying to work that out. You know, how many was I short? And they didn't go back to me, so.
I guess, help me to understand. So you voluntarily surrendered your license.
Sorry?
In Colorado. You voluntarily surrendered your license in Colorado, correct?
Yeah, because I thought that because I didn't live there anymore, they had this Section 12, and I asked them about it, and I completely misunderstood. I thought that because I didn't live there anymore and practice there anymore, that, you know, that it didn't matter. And so. That's why you get a lawyer, I guess.
Looking at the record, and I'm specifically looking at your email. Dated October 8th, 2023. Did Colorado, was they requiring you to take 40 new credit hours? Is that what they were requiring?
Yes, 40 credit hours, and I had 90 days to do it in.
And you thought, because I'm not living in there and I have an Arizona license, I'm just not going to do that.
Because I thought that I could wipe the slate clean with this Section 12 or whatever that said, if you don't live here anymore, you don't practice anymore, none of this applies to you.
Okay.
It was a lot of CEUs.
Are you willing to do those CEUs now?
Sure. If it helps, yeah. I mean, I want to fix this.
Mr. Harris, is there any difference between getting a consent agreement, a non-disciplinary consent agreement, or a just an order, ordering non-disciplinary continuing education?
The only difference is that if you offer a non-disciplinary consent agreement, it's final. It's not appealable. A non-disciplinary order, they do have appeal remedies.
Okay. Did you read the order from Colorado?
I'm sorry?
Did you read the physical therapy order from Colorado?
What the big sheet of paper they sent me?
The stipulation and final agency order? Yeah.
Yeah.
Where you surrendered
your rights. They sent me a couple, and they looked exactly the same, and I honestly thought it said it could be a disciplinary action on it. I don't know. Have you seen those?
Yeah, and I'm reading from the finding of fact number 6. It says, mm-hmm. By virtue of the admissions above, the respondent acknowledges and the board finds that the respondent is subject to discipline.
Mm-hmm. And that was
I read that so many times and I didn't see that, honestly.
And I'm reading the title that says, in the matter of disciplinary proceedings.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but it doesn't say whether you're going to have a disciplinary.
Can I say something about the that 6, the way I'm reading that, and I know you've seen a lot of them, but I've been doing this for a long time. I think that's an acknowledgement that you guys have jurisdiction. I mean, what I see is the terms of the order on page 3 through 4 and 5. That's where I would normally look, and I think everyone on this call would look to see what the terms of the order are, and it would say there that it's disciplined. And that's the part I'm saying it doesn't. I think I don't know that 6 says that you're disciplined.
I mean, the statement in 6 is, by virtue of the admission stated above, the respondent acknowledges and the board finds that the respondent is subject to discipline pursuant to sections 12285 and 119(1)(1)(1)(1)(1)(1)(1)(1)(1)(1)(1)(1)(1)(1)(1)(1)(1)(1)(1)(1)(1)(1)(1)(1)(1)(1)(1)(1)(1)(1)(1)(1)(1)(1)(1)(1)(1)(1)(1)(1)(1)(1)(1)(1)(1)(1)(1)(1)(1)(1)(1)(1)(1)(1)(1)(1)(1)(1)(1)(1)(1)(1)(1)(1)(1)(1)(1)(1)(1)(1)(1)(1)(1)(1)(1)(1)(1)(1)(1)(1)(1)(1)(1)(1)(1)(1)(1)(1)(1)(1)(1)(1)(1)(1)(1)(1)(1)(1)(1)(1)(1)(1)(1)(1)(1)(1)(1)(1)(1)(1)(1)(1)(1)(1)(1)(1)(1)(1)(1)(1)(1)(1)(1)(1)(1)(1)(1)(1
with the outcome that she would relinquish her license.
Mm-hmm. I think about the, and I don't mean to bump us into discussion, but I mean, I think about the way that we typically handle disciplinary actions. Mm-hmm. I don't know that we say in every sentence, this is disciplinary, this is disciplinary, this is disciplinary. We just say, this is a disciplinary action. We have jurisdiction, which they say in two. And then we say they're subject to discipline under our rules.
No, I think you're right, Mr. Barton. Ours are very similar to this. We had findings of facts and conclusions of law, which is what these are. And then you've got the terms of the order. We don't say in the terms of the order necessarily there's disciplinary. That's part of findings of facts and conclusions of law, that there was, that the allegations were substantiated, and disciplinary action was taken as a result. Then you've got 7, 8, 9, 10 through 15 with a board order.
Right.
And then she signed it.
But isn't that where you would have the censure, reprimand, probation, suspension, state revocation, all that? When you have at the end of your order, there should be some language like that saying, this is what we're imposing on you. I think you'd have that.
Well, yeah, but you have that here. It says there's a voluntary relinquishment. I mean, that's kind of the end of it, right? Once the order's, once the license is gone.
But who does that tell as a non-lawyer that's a discipline? That's my point. Voluntary relinquishment.
I mean, to me, it says it pretty clearly in 6, and it says it pretty clearly in the title.
Mm-hmm.
Josh, I see it in 13, 14, 17 as well.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Yeah.
Yeah. Are there any more questions for Ms. Matthews or her attorney?
Thank you, Madam Vice Chair.
Thank you.
Okay. We can continue to deliberate.
Where I would like to go with this is I would like to see if she would agree to do the 40 hours required by Colorado. I would do a non-disciplinary consent agreement. And if she doesn't accept it, then have her come back for an informal hearing. I hope Colorado would treat our orders with deference. And I think had we known about this, we would have required the completion of the Colorado CEUs before we would issue a license. So that being said, you know, I don't think we need to take her license away as long as she's willing to do. And I don't care if she goes to Colorado and does them as long as she does them. And so that's where I'm thinking. If anyone agrees, we can talk about it or I can make a motion.
I agree with you, Mr. Carter.
Well, what would you say, Dr. King?
I agree with you on all these, on the points and the terms of a potential consent agreement.
The only thing that concerns me, Josh, is again, as I'm reading through this, and I think you pointed this out as well, it's all over the place. This is it kind of beggars belief in my mind to believe that somebody read this and said, this is not disciplinary. Or that I could answer a question to say I haven't been subject to any discipline when they voluntarily relinquished a license in a disciplinary proceeding via a consent agreement that repeatedly says it's disciplinary.
That all happened after she got licensed.
Mm-hmm. That's true.
She received her license in October of 22.
But she had a duty to report it, right? And she acknowledges that duty. I get that the timeline is not that it's not like she's filling out the license application in Arizona, but she acknowledges her duty to report it. I think that concerns me somewhat. I'm torn because I don't think it goes so. I agree with you, Josh. If this was a renewal that she had renewed and not disclosed this, I think I would be feeling like we needed to be disciplinary. But I wonder, I'm a little concerned about that and wonder if we need to do something extra on that front. I wholeheartedly agree with you on the fact that I think we need to enforce the Colorado finding. And I think that's probably, most of it, if not all of it. I guess that was the only discussion I thought we ought to have is do we want to, or should we add something on after that? Regarding the failure to report. And I mean, maybe the solution to that is that there's a CEU on, I don't know if there is a CEU on reporting requirements or obligations under licensure for this kind of stuff. But maybe we specify some kind of CEU in that area. I'm not sure.
And I guess my question on this too is that, she said she's taken the coursework. Is she able to submit the courses that she took during this compliance period to Arizona? Or does she have to make this right with Colorado?
Well, I think she's lost the opportunity to make it right with Colorado. And as I understand it, if she did the number of hours, she didn't do the right kinds of hours.
Right.
That's what I understood. And when audited, she said, oh, I'm not there anymore. I don't need my license anymore. And basically, hey, I'm not going to do it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because I have my Arizona license. And had we known about it if the audit had happened literally three months earlier, we would have required her to do that prior to issuing a license.
Right.
And so to make everything right, I would, I'd give her a chance to do it. Mm-hmm. And more, it's a whole lot of CEUs, Josh. I don't know
if that's
we need
true.
Anything more. And I'm just going, I'm just going on her representations of that they require 40 hours. You know, I'll give her a little more than the 90 days, but not much more. I'm thinking 6 months to get them done.
Yeah, it's.
And I guess, Josh, what I'm wondering is, do we specify that some of those CEUs need to be related to? And again, I don't even know if there are CEUs for this, but related to reporting requirements or disciplinary process or something like that.
And Josh, you kind of stumbled on why I wanted to do this as a consent agreement instead of a board order, because in a consent agreement, I think Judy and Mark can figure out exactly what requires.
Sure.
I didn't want to do that right now. So,
yeah.
You know, it would be whatever Colorado requires, and I just don't know what they do, and I didn't want to figure it out right now.
That's fair.
But yeah, that's just me cutting quarters.
So Josh, you were thinking 40 hours of CEUs?
Yeah, and that's based on her Sunday, October 8, 2023 email on page 6 of 14 in our materials.
Got it.
And I'm open. If that's not correct, if she comes to say, hey, actually what I really needed to do was 33 hours, it's whatever Colorado required.
Right.
Mm-hmm. The only evidence I have of what that requirement is 40 hours and 90 days.
Yeah.
Would you like me to make a motion, Dr. Bustillo, or do you want to continue?
Yes, please.
I would move that we offer the respondent a non-disciplinary consent agreement to allow her to complete 40 hours of continuing education as required by the continuation that was required by Colorado to be completed within 6 months. These CEUs would not count for her Arizona renewal requirement. Anything else? I don't think so. That's my motion.
Second.
Any further discussion? Okay, I think we're ready, Judy.
One point of clarification. Is Ms. Leg Matthews allowed to submit the certificates that she has already provided to Colorado for review, or are you talking about 40 hours brand new?
I believe Colorado has already said those weren't sufficient.
Mm-hmm.
And so stuff that she's previously submitted to Colorado as part of the audit, I would say, no, that's not sufficient. If she's taken other CEUs that she'd like to submit, if they apply, and Judy, I'm sorry for this, but you're going to have to figure out what Colorado required. That's going to have to be in the consent agreement. But, and so, does that help? But yeah, stuff that she's already provided part of the audit, I don't think it counts because Colorado's already said that's not sufficient. But if there's anything else that she'd like to submit, you know, I'd leave it up to you to determine whether that counts or not. We don't have any evidence of anything in the record that she has done. And I believe her testimony was she didn't do it. She gave up her license instead of doing it. So I don't think she has anything to submit, but so, you know, she can't. I guess that's my answer. Does that clarify things?
Yeah. Yes, thank you.
And then I don't know if I said this, but if she doesn't accept the non-disciplinary consent agreement, I'd invite her to an informal hearing.
Judy, if it's helpful, there, it does look like the board order from Colorado outlines what the requirements were for CEUs to meet their renewal expectations, and it's on page 9 of 14.
Are you looking at 5, paragraph 5?
5B.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Thank you. Okay. Are you ready for the question?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
In case 2386, Suzanne Legg Matthews PT, it has been moved and seconded to issue a non-disciplinary consent agreement to allow her to complete 40 hours of continuing education in satisfaction of the Colorado continuing education requirements to include continuing education, which shall be completed in 6 months. Courses, do you want the course to be pre-approved?
Yes.
Courses must be pre-approved and may be completed online. They do not count towards Arizona renewal requirements. Dr. Bustillo?
Yes.
Dr. King?
Yes.
Mr. Leone?
Yes.
Mr. Greer?
Yes.
Mr. Barton?
Yes.
That motion passes.
So, Ms. Matthews, the staff will be in touch with you regarding moving forward here. Please have your coursework pre-approved. It helps.
Okay, thank you.
All right, Judy, I'd like to see if we can do a 5 to 10 minute little comfort break here and then.
That sounds good. It 5 or 10 minutes, which would you prefer? Or would you like to just come back straight up at 11 o'clock? It's 10:52 right now.
Perfect. I think that's great.
Okay. The board will be in recess until 11 o'clock. The recording will stop and we will return at 11.